Across the country, folks are listening to A Nerd? Yep, Benjamin Rockwell is back at it again. And now, with a quest of enriching your experience with computers, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
There's a bunch in store for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. Bob's question, if I fall for a scam, is it worth reporting it? Maya's got a question, why do I keep getting pop-ups even though I have an ad blocker? August, why does my computer slow down when I open many programs? Ethan, why do we accept digital decay when we wouldn't accept it in the real world? Marty's going to talk to us about the Weber Spirit E325 grill. Keith Emcedor, well, he and I are going to talk about what we don't want from Apple at next week's Apple event. On the IT Pro series, we need to rethink cybersecurity to the people level. Steve Keske is going to ask me for more understanding on VPNs, virtual private networks. And Dr. Doreen Galley, she's going to report on the commercial UAV expo. All of that is on this week's Computer Talk Radio. Of course, if you miss any of this, feel free to check out the podcast at computertalkradio.com. You can also contact me there with your computer questions, your technology concerns, and I will answer them. Of course, there's the phone number as well, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373, 888. You know what? If I don't answer the phone, that's okay. Leave a message. I will get back to you. Give me all the details you can on the message. And yes, I'm more than happy to talk to you whenever I can. Let's dive into the news from the last week. And first up, we are a month away, a little bit more than a month, from the demise of Windows 10. Windows 11 managed to surpass Windows 10 in users in July, which isn't great. It's taken a long time to get there. Let's forget that, though, because the August numbers showed that Windows 11 lost 4.4 points of market share of Windows in that month. Now, it is still ahead. It still has more than Windows 10 users, but it's clear that the discounts on the operating system, the ads everywhere, the ads within Windows 11, some media pull, and more, they aren't working for Microsoft. The tech industry shows that innovators move ahead. They win time and time again, as long as they keep innovating. Windows 12, or whatever they're going to call it, isn't even being talked about in anything more than a vague reference by a Microsoft executive a couple of months ago to a next version with an AI-driven interface that won't rely on your keyboard. Windows 10 just turned 10 years old. Windows 11 is 4 years old next month. And this leaves a lot of us really wondering what happened to the old history of Microsoft being an innovator in technology. This is not a really great place for Microsoft to be in. Now, Google Chrome and Android are still safely in the hands of Google after an antitrust ruling this week said, no, we're not going to make you sell them off. Now, I don't support, nor do I deride this decision, as it's far more complex than we could ever sit down and imagine. I just am reporting on what happened. I do see this as good news for Google at a time when they are dealing with concerns about other AI platforms, their online advertising business being declared a monopoly, and other setbacks as they try to build more business in other areas of technology. A spin-off of these two key components of Google would have been distinctly astounding and dramatic and tough, especially since both products are free to consumers. Of course, that does mean that we are the product, and that's another story for another day. A breakup like this could have been ugly, as Chrome is the most popular browser by far. In a world where there are many browsers to choose, and all of them are free, again, for the same reason, because we are the product. Google does have a scary impact, however, as far as its vast reach into our tech lives. So what would happen if they did make it break up? Maybe that would be good. Maybe that would be bad. Who knows? Now, Mark Zuckerberg, not the one you know, is suing Mark Zuckerberg, the one you do know, the head of Meta, a.k.a. Facebook. Now, this all comes down to a middle name issue. They have different middle names and middle initials, of course, where Facebook has shut down an attorney's paid Facebook account and advertising multiple times. And the approach there, they think the name is an attempt at impersonation. Facebook has plagued a lot of smaller business owners, as has Google, for various alleged violations like names or the idea of violating unwritten rules or whatever else they dream up at the time. In this case, no pun intended, the attorney in Indiana is struggling over missed communications, attempts to promote his legal business, and more. His request for restitution is for lost business and ad money, and he also hopes for a chance to meet the other guy with the same name. I can't blame him, and I hope that I never, ever, ever have a problem like that. Now, Samsung had an event this week. They announced the Galaxy S25 FE and the Tab S11 series. This actually isn't unexpected, as Samsung usually places their September phone event near Apple's. But it was first this time around, perhaps hoping to steal some spotlight before Apple's event next week. Still, it wasn't all that remarkable. You see, the FE is a budget version called the Fan Edition. And since it's not the flagship, it's not all that remarkable from previous versions of the flagship. Both the S25 FE, or Fan Edition, and the Tab have processor, camera, and battery bumps, as would be expected in this day and age. So, not all that remarkable. Samsung only occupies about 22% of the mobile market in the United States, whereas Apple has 57%. So these announcements aren't really earth-shattering. Okay, now it's up Apple's turn to wow us. And speaking of that, so Apple has another event in store for us. It's coming next week, as most have expected. And we did mention this, I think, a little bit earlier, a month or a few weeks ago, whatever. Anyways, Apple has had their iPhone event in early September for years now. We do not, at Computer Talk Radio, deal in speculation. Now, the rumor mill did have Keith and I talking a lot about what might be coming. This week, we are going to spend time talking about what we don't want to see at the event, which is also very important. Next week, we'll spend a good deal of time covering whatever Apple announces and giving our typical unvarnished opinion along the way. Nerds like Legos, and I'm absolutely no exception here. Normally, here at Computer Talk Radio, I would just leave a Lego announcement off of the news. I wouldn't dive into a whole lot in regards to this. But this new announcement really appeals to me as a Star Wars fan as well. This new set from Lego is the Star Wars Ultimate Death Star set, and it looks like a cross-section of the massive ship from the series. It is also huge. When we think of Lego sets, we think of a few hundred in size, or maybe 1,000. This one, however, gets into sizes that will set your build time back by many hours. It's not the tallest, nor the largest in piece count, which actually is a replica of the Eiffel Tower. Still, this thing sits at 9,023 pieces, with 38 minifigs, that's the little guys, including Darth Vader, Emperor Palpatine, and Luke Skywalker. The other big thing about this is that this makes for the most expensive Lego set yet. You'll probably want to start saving up for this one because it's a whopping $1,000. Back in August, the FAA rolled out a big proposal that could change how drones take to the skies. Right now, pilots mostly have to keep their drones in sight, but the new Part 108 rule would allow flights beyond visual range. Think of package deliveries, farm monitoring, survey work. And these changes could be really big for anyone flying a drone. It's all part of Congress's demand that the FAA finalize clear rules in what is a growing industry, both on the commercial side, but also on the civilian side. And coming up next, Dr. Doreen Galley went to the Commercial UAV Expo in Las Vegas, and we'll touch on this as well here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it, meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. I will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Dr. Doreen Galley joins me, and she has spent a good portion of this week at another expo, the CUAV, which stands for Commercial Unmanned Aerial Vehicles.
Yeah.
And
also known as drones.
Drones, yes. So my first question for you, how big was the booth at DJI?
Interestingly, it was big, but the whole talk of the show was, do they realize they can't be here next year, that we can't use any of their stuff? So there was a whole side whisper going on about the DJI booth.
Yeah. Interesting. Of course, the flip side, of course, it's been shoved back, three times now? Their deadline and all of that, who knows what's going to happen? You know, they're still a favorite out there. Everybody loves their what's the opposite of commercial? Residential drones. The non-commercial space loves them. It's civilian, yes, thank you. Well, that has a military aspect. Anyways, so what all did you see there? What excited you the most at the CUAV?
Well, that's really tough.
Okay.
I didn't analyze anything yet. I just spent the last 2 days. Well, the fun part was yesterday morning, I was about to leave early because initially they said you can't do any of the sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sent me a notification saying they have special seating for press in the very front.
Okay.
So I'm like, well, that's interesting. I mean, it's great to have a great view, but you said I can't record anything. I'm like, oh, no, you can. And so they said I could use the same as the black hat rules.
Okay.
Keynotes.
Okay.
Keynotes is what they said. So I stuck to the keynote. So I'm like, this is great. So that's an hour earlier than I usually head to the show, which means I'm also more in the traffic with everyone else dealing with traffic.
Sure.
I go to my website and I got attacked again.
No.
I kid you not.
Oh, no.
So shout out to Stanley at INOS. He helped got it back. I'm like, please. So he helped me. So he got it back up and I'm running to the event. I got there in time.
Mm-hmm.
I got the keynote.
Mm-hmm.
So that was exciting. So I got 10 minutes of a bit of those, and I did the walkabouts and all of that. I got 79 videos in all.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, the three questions, of course, and then the conference whisper. So the three questions for this conference was the biggest UAV threat the chief information officers aren't ready for?
Okay, wow.
Yeah. Heavy. There was two responses, either, oh, yeah, and they had something to say, or frequently they would say heavy. Mm-hmm. Heavy was an answer got back. And definitely, I can't wait to read it and see it. So,
okay.
The playlists are unlisted, but they're always in the description for the conference whisper.
Okay. All right.
Primary one. And then the second one, how will drones change enterprise data strategy? And the third is, what's the most underrated UAV use case in industry?
Okay. That's an interesting one there. Okay. So what was kind of the big one that hit out of that for underrated?
The main thing, like, it's hard. I didn't analyze it yet, right? So I have no idea. But I did notice that a couple people mentioned agriculture as they're just not using it enough, whether it's for crop management, pest management, animal management. There was a lot about that.
We've grown corn for 50 years. What do we need those crazy drones flying things for?
Yeah. To go find the animals eating the corn.
Yes.
Find where they are and go find them. And so it was interesting because you really felt the maturity of drones and organizations coming about. So mm-hmm. I had a flashback to the dot-com era.
Okay.
Do you remember technology did not used to be an enterprise function?
Yes.
It came up department by department. Mm-hmm. And then around the dot-com era, people started realizing, well, I have three different licenses for X in my company. Mm-hmm. And why don't we do this at the enterprise level? Mm-hmm. That type of, why are we doing it this way? You sent the drone out to get this data. I sent drones to the same place to get data for my purpose. Why didn't I repurpose your data for my purpose? So data is very siloed. Mm-hmm. Data is mm-hmm. massive. This data is sensor data. And that was one of my expertise going back a long time. They still distribute my document at my former big firm I was at. I know because they ping me on LinkedIn on how to work with sensor data to create analytics. They usually don't pass out papers from 2018, but they still hand out my research.
Sure. Yeah. You know?
But because sensor data is not like transaction data from finance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect. The sensors are not perfect. They make errors.
Right.
Just as a matter of, you don't make life and death decisions on a single reading. Mm-hmm. And it's also voluminous at a level that most organizations, I mean, you just think about the data per second it produces.
Yes.
So there's a lot of that interesting going on, but it very much reminded me of that. We need to take an enterprise view and clean this up type mm-hmm. approach. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of conflating of AI. People would use the term AI referring to generative AI.
Okay.
And there's a very big difference. Traditional AI is 100% mathematics based, just like, I guess, generative AI, but it's not really guessing. In some ways it tells you where it comes through, the majority of things go, but it doesn't hallucinate. Mm-hmm, that mm-hmm, is strictly mm-hmm. a generative solution, right? When you go into traditional AI, it's just applied math.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Literally, it's the math formulas that have been in your servers for decades and decades. It's not new. It's not unusual. It's not unreliable if you know what you're doing and all that sort of thing. And so I think people really have to be careful and clarify if you're referring to AI or generative AI, because they have very different characteristics and you don't want to conflate them.
Yes.
The keynote this morning had a very interesting quote.
Okay.
They were talking about collaboration and the need for collaboration and about FAA agreements and getting support and all of that. And the quote was said, safety is not proprietary.
Okay, I like that. That is, I mean, that's something we should be applying across the board with everything. You know, there's not a proprietary algorithm or whatever you want to say about it, about keeping kids out of the street. This is something we should be applying everywhere in our lives. And it's interesting that they're kind of having to talk about it, but it's still very true. I like that.
Right. And they have to always make these FAA applications. And a lot of times they're going for waivers, although Part 108 may not have waivers, but now they do. And what the suggestion was is, you know, look at the ones approved. Leverage some of the solutions and say, hey, you approved this solution. We're doing the same thing. You know, mm-hmm. You figure out what works, tell everyone, because everyone has to figure out how to safely, financially yes. operate drones to get the mission accomplished and not harm the society and civilization below it.
Yes. Yes. Very true.
So that was very neat. There was a lot of talk on Part 108. One of the videos I got, they had an amazing discussion on the areas of concern. You only have until October 6th, I believe, to comment back. And they made some areas. And so you want to check that out. If you're a drone operator and you're concerned with Part 108, or you don't know you should be concerned, you should be concerned.
This is part of the FAA legal rules as far as flying drones.
Yes, yes. And the conversation that the gentleman had did a great job in terms of don't copy and paste. If it's copy and paste, it's considered the same comment. Use your mm-hmm. own words, mm-hmm. your own language. Speak in plain English that someone not in your sector. You can use avionics shorthand, but that would be the only acceptable shorthand to use. And drones use different shorthand than traditional pilots.
Yeah. Yeah,
go seek it out if they had some really good advice.
All right. How can people find these videos of yours?
TBW Advisors on YouTube. T for technical, B for business, W for whispers.
Very cool. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Dr. Doreen Galley. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Keith M. Seador joins me now, and we are, well, we're about a week away from the next keynote from Apple. And yes, we already are quite sure this is just based off of the last, whatever it is, 10 years. This is going to be the new iPhone. It's going to be whatever else that they announce. And we don't get into the rumor mill here. We do not get into talking about the rumor mill because we want to report on cold, solid.
Do not engage. Do not engage.
Hard fact. And and one of the things I've asked Keith over the course of the years, we've gone in a couple of different directions on the last week before the big keynote. This year, I want to kind of spin one of the things we've asked over the years in different ways. Keith, there's all kinds of stuff you've seen and heard. But we always hope for surprises. What are the things you don't want to see? What are the things you don't want to be surprised by at this coming keynote?
Well, there is the possibility we could see a sub-500 MacBook, probably akin to the old 12-inch MacBook. And there was a reason why Apple... let that wither on the Vine.
Okay.
After just a couple of years.
So you don't want to see that.
I don't like ultra entry level products. I mean, I like products with a good price point. That's why I think the 15-inch MacBook Air, which has been out for a couple of years, is an excellent product, because you can get a 15-inch MacBook. If you're not doing ultra high-end stuff, you can get one for, you know, under $1,800 rather than $35,000, $4,000. So what don't I want to see? I don't want to see updated Mac Minis or Mac Studios. I think those computers are useless because you have to buy a display with them when the iMac is a perfectly good machine. So, yeah.
You don't want to see a $100 Apple Watch that's missing a metal band, missing the heartbeat feature, missing everything. Well,
until they settle their lawsuit with the company who's got...
Yeah, there's that, yeah.
You know, because Apple supposedly started releasing Apple Watches not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, with the oxygen sensor reinstated based upon some legal jargon as to
who's
in charge of the patent for some part of it. And the company is incensed about...
Oh, yes. They were apoplectic over that.
So, I don't know what I don't want. I'll tell you what I do want. Not product specific. I just want to be wowed. I haven't been wowed by Apple in quite a long time.
Okay, but they've promised that this is awe-dropping. Do you really think it's going to be awe-dropping?
No, I don't. Because... Apple has been terrible with its implementation of Siri. Siri is dumber than a box of hammers. So you know I'm not a fanboy if I'm going to sit here and tell you that. For as much as I love the company
Apple
and its
Intelligence, not a winner for you.
With Apple Intelligence, Apple's not firing on all cylinders. And there have been not rumor mill stuff, it's news stuff, because, you know, Google is rumored to be negotiating with Apple as to whether or not they're going to include some iPhone-specific version of Gemini in a future version of iOS. And I hope they do, because supposedly they're working with four separate Google teams, hoping that one of them is going to give them something good. Plus, they still have internal teams working on their own AI. So there's a minimum of five different teams working on AI.
Yeah.
And I hope one of them does something innovative.
You know, one of the things, just taking a spin off of that, you know, I got my new iPad, and I do like it. It was time to replace the iPad.
Okay.
And one of the things that was touted was Apple Intelligence. Mm-hmm. Now, it had the latest operating system on it. Great. Not iOS 26 or iPad OS, 20, whatever. But oddly enough, it took, I kept on poking it, saying I wanted to use Apple Intelligence. It took 3, 4, 5 days for it to finally get its act into gear so I could have it recognize some objects in a picture that I took. I was dumbfounded. This should have been out of the box, just working. And
I mean, the very fact that they have to ask you whether or not you want to enable this technology right there tells you they're tentative about it to begin with. Because I set up new Macs for people. Forget about the iPhone for a second. I set up new Macs for people, and in Sequoia, the current version of Mac OS, during the setup screens, it asks you if you want to turn on and activate Apple Intelligence. And I do, as a matter of course, because, you know, it's like if this is going to be part of the Mac OS going forward, I want my clients to be engaged with it.
Yeah.
But I use it, and they've got this, I forget what it's called, but it's this, you know, cartoon picture generating app. And it's just the most ridiculous looking thing that
indeed
I wouldn't give it to my 9-year-old to play with because it's just dumb.
I used that and I thought, okay, it's cute. It has no no application.
No redeeming value whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, oh, hey, Duplo blocks, you know? Great. Yeah, good for a 5-year-old, but not much more. That was disappointing. But it was time for me to upgrade my iPad, and I did.
And it's a bad implementation. I told her to draw a hot chocolate-covered marshmallow, and it didn't even do that well.
Oh, dear. Oh, well, as for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seador.
Next week, we'll tell you all about what happened at the keynote here on Computer Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Of course, that's just one of the ways you can reach out to us and scroll down to where it says contact us today. I will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. We say Computer Talk Radio, but any of the ideas of tech are open to us. Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, what do you have for us this week?
Well, you know how much we all love cooking outdoors.
Yes, yes. And well, with Labor Day just having passed, depending on where you are in the country. Of course, if you're in Southern California or Arizona, your cooking outdoor days are still going to go through to
Christmas.
Southern
California or Arizona, you don't need a grill.
Just set it out on the sidewalk. Very true, yeah.
A few weeks ago. It seems like a few weeks when grilling season began, I took the cover off of our 2-burner natural gas grill.
Yeah.
I opened the top and saw all the way down to the decking planks.
Uh-oh. That's not good. Yeah.
Bottom of the grill had dropped its Dr. Denton's. So I did some. I did something that I had never, ever done before.
Mm-hmm.
I asked Weber if I could review one of theirs.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Now, they sent the 3-burner Spirit E325.
Okay, tell me about this.
Well, their experience first showed in how much simpler assembly happened.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Got all those warnings. You need 2 people. You got to do all that. Not only was I able to build it myself, and I'm not the he-man I used to be.
Yeah, okay.
I was able to haul it from the garage to the deck in 3 pieces and get it all put together. And yeah, I didn't feel like I was going to be having muscle meds for the next 3 weeks or anything.
Sure,
Everything was good. One of the coolest things about this grill is that 2 of its 3 burners have a mode that it can heat up the grates to 700 degrees.
Okay, nice, nice, yeah.
Creates a sear zone.
Yes, yes.
And that's not just a stunt. It puts grill marks on the meat. Then you can shift the meat over to the cooler side and have wonderful control over doneness. And I did that over and over this summer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The cover also has one of the biggest faces on a built-in thermometer that I've ever seen.
Yeah, okay.
And if you're tracking, well, I don't use it so much for doneness. I use a probe thermometer for that.
Yeah.
But I do take a look at closing the lid and watching the chamber get its heat back up again.
Yes, yes.
And sometimes that also helps me track time in my cooking. And between the two of them, by now I've learned, better check that probe.
Yeah.
I've had wonderful, wonderfully seared, very dark stripe outsides and perfectly tender insides with pork, with chicken, with steak. It's been quite a season, I have to tell you. But there's just two of us. So three burners, 360 square inches of cooking area. It's outstanding.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a nice size grill there. Yeah.
Yeah. We even did a test, and I'll tell you about this in another segment.
Okay.
With bacon.
Oh, bacon. Oh, man. That is, of course, that is just a wonderful.
That other segment's about the accessories they got me for it. And okay. I'm really, really impressed. By the way, it's the sear zone that really sets this grill apart for the way I do my grilling. And the E325 is about $550.
So now what does this run on? Is this a
natural gas? They also have propane. Okay. I choose natural gas because I don't want to fill those cans anymore.
I get that. I get that.
It's very easy. The old one was on the pull-push kind of gas connection. All I had to do was pull the old hose off and put this one in, light it up. I did make a mistake early on because, of course, I hadn't had a chance to open and read the manual yet.
Yeah.
I went to light it up, and it's got the knob has the built-in, I think it's a piezo, and you hit it when it clicks, then you hear it go, and lighted.
Yeah.
Because of the diverters that are above the gas grill, you really don't directly see the flame unless you're bending over to look for it.
Okay, yeah.
And I didn't quite get when you do and don't push the knob.
Okay.
So a couple of times I went to light it and it didn't.
Yeah.
And when you read the manual, all of that is clear. So it's not a fault with it.
Step A, do this. Step B. Yeah. Okay. Did you singe your hair or what?
No, but I did have an occasion. I did have an occasion when I thought the center one was on, and when I lit the one on the end, it looked rather like a movie special effect.
Oh, dear.
No permanent harm to anything.
Oh, man. I remember back in the day, you know, my grandfather would go on out and he'd do the charcoal grill and he'd roll in. And we had a Weber way back then. And he put in all the charcoal and then he would pour on, the lighter fluid and always way too much. He never got into fireworks, but I only needed once and I stayed clear of that fireball that would result from that. So, yeah, I mean, I totally get it.
I remember that. And I have to tell you, Weber's a market leader and this grill really told me why.
Okay. So, what is the model number on this?
It's the Weber Spirit, E as in Edward, E325.
And I don't know, did you cover the price already? Go ahead and do it again.
Yeah, it's about $550.
Okay, all right. Not bad. That's something I'm going to definitely look into for next summer. I'm already packing up outdoors because the weather is starting to already get in. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com.
site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And Bob's question is how we, the answer to Bob's question is how we solve this. Bob asks, if I fall for a scam, is it really worth reporting it? What's the point? And I will tell you, yes, that's the very, very simple answer. This is one of the best things you can do is after a fire, or even if you, I mean, you've got all the flames out. You think everything's fine. You need to call the fire department. Yes, it may seem like nothing. It may seem like everything's taken care of. But even if the flames are out, they can still spark up again. You don't know what other damage has been done elsewhere around you. So this becomes a very key point. Even after somebody breaks into your car and steals something out of your car, you still want to report it. There are, in those cases, there's things like insurance concerns and things like that. But hopefully, you, by reporting this to the police, that you are hopefully going to stop whoever it is out there that's breaking into other cars. You're working towards the greater good of everybody. Sure, there may be a concern in some areas where the cops go, really? Yeah. I don't want to be bothered with this. But in reality, all of this information can be stored. All of this information can be held aside. And when this reporting happens, it helps track patterns. It helps track the idea, wow, we had a lot of people in this small little neighborhood get broken into. Maybe there's something we need to do as cops. We have whatever it is that's going on here, and we need to be on top of this. And the same thing happens with scammers. These scammers will continue if nobody reports them. So we have to report them. Now, when you report them, I don't want you to have in your mind this idea that you call your local cops, you fell for a scam, some online thing, and that because you report this, that they're going to be able to recover your funds. That doesn't happen all the time, doesn't happen a lot of the time, doesn't happen most of the time. But by tracking this information, the police can help prevent future victims. They can give you guidance as well to help ensure that you don't fall for something like this again. And there's a number of different places you can file these reports. It's more than just your local police. You can file them with the Federal Trade Commission. You can file them with the FBI. They have something called IC3. And you can even consult with your state attorney general. Now, someone along the way may decide it's not important, but someone may, and someone may log this and they track this, and they can help all of us, you, me, and everybody else, actually beat the bad guys and stop them cold. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about the Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
He doesn't sound like a nerd, but the computers are still scared of him. Helping you gain the upper hand with your computer, here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Of course, the phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-637-3888. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact all of our lives. Steve Kesky joins me now. And Steve, what do you have for us this week?
I want somebody to explain to me what a VPN is and how it works. And is it really as good as they say it is?
A VPN is a virtual private network. And let's see here. Let's dive into the first place. People usually arrive at seeing what these are. It is a secure tunnel for information between their PC, which they take home from work,
yeah,
and all of the work servers. It is very similar to being on the network at the office while you're sitting at home. And it handles all of the different transactions of data that are going on. First off, it handles a secure connection. So it's opening up, and we use the term tunnel. It's opening up that tunnel between your home, specifically just that PC, and work. And hackers can't come in from the side. They can't find different ways in because all of that traffic is encrypted. It's all set very secure that way.
Hmm.
Now, when we start dealing with bigger situations, sometimes we will set up a VPN between a home office where somebody might have three computers all connecting into the office. They connect into each other. Maybe a remote office would be a better, yeah, situation where you've got three computers and they're all connecting up, but they all connect up to a central location within the office. And then the information between that remote office and the corporate office is still all secure and so forth. It allows for you to utilize a lot of different resources in that localized office, like a separate file server or printers and things like that.
Yeah.
Although as we've moved along, we have enabled a lot more of that, even with the VPN software. So many different companies will allow you to work from home, but also connect up to a network printer at home. And it does a lot of that translation and says, oh, that printer is here. It doesn't need to go sending that information all the way through the corporate network, all the way out there, and then come back to a printer that is only dedicated for use on the corporate network.
Yeah.
And a number of different things like that. Okay. So that's a VPN for a work situation.
Mm.
Now, you start getting into situations where people are traveling for work. Now, that same VPN can be utilized for securing that information, even if you're in another country, and pretend like you are in your home country. So let's say somebody is going off and they are traveling off to France. Well, the VPN is going to actually make it seem like it's coming from whatever the corporate office is. Let's say your corporate office is in New York City. Well, it's going to, if you ask it for recommendations for lunch, it isn't going to give you France. It's going to give you
New York City.
And that's just because they've redefined a lot of where the information is going on out and hitting the internet.
Sure.
And you can tweak, of course, your query and say, what are good places for lunch in Paris, France, or yeah, whatever. So this is kind of that start of that situation there. Now, we go to that next step. So we've been talking about work so far. Personal usage. Now, the nice thing about personal usage of a VPN is that same kind of secure information flow to a central location, much like we had the corporate office. You can utilize a VPN to secure your traffic and to de-localize your information. And how that works is if you are a bit more security conscious, you're dealing with stuff, you might be a freelance consultant, but you don't want people to really track down the fact that you are a freelance consultant that might be in Los Angeles one week, Mexico City the next week, and France the following week.
Right.
It will still look like you are sitting in Los Angeles, or whatever location, depending on your VPN.
Yeah.
So some VPNs will allow for that continued localization. Make it look like I'm in the general Los Angeles area. Make it look like I'm in the New York City area. Make it look like I'm in wherever. And it will do some level of that. Now, where that comes in very nice is if I'm on Netflix, I can watch Netflix movies based on my location. But some movies are not available on Netflix if you're off in France. Some of the TV shows, some of the different streaming content.
Right.
Now, if you are a United States citizen and you have a United States Netflix account and you're in the middle of watching, I'm trying to think of a TV series at the moment on Netflix. Firefly is my favorite TV series of all times. So I'll go
with it.
It's not on Netflix at the moment. But if I wanted to watch Firefly while I'm traveling around the world, the VPN is actually going to allow for that localization to pop up and say that I'm still in Los Angeles, even though I'm in Mexico City.
Yeah.
So there is an advantage there. And there are people who continue to use that advantage because they are expats. They've left the United States and they're off in another country, but they still want a lot of the English language TV shows that they are familiar with, that they want to continue watching, and they want to keep in touch with more of that American entertainment.
Sure.
This also comes into play a lot. There are people who do utilize VPNs outside of, and I want to touch on this because this is a known thing. I don't necessarily support it, but I do recognize that it exists and it is easy for people to do. There are people who want to watch movies that are based off in the United States Netflix account, and they aren't available in Mexico. So they are utilizing VPNs to move that traffic that way. Not the greatest thing. You're stepping around some of the end user license agreements, and it starts getting into kind of a gray zone. The nice thing about VPNs, it does lock down the traffic. It does protect all of the things that you've got going on, because that entire section of traffic is secure. So if you're in France and you're trying to deal with sensitive information with work, the French authorities can't come in and sneak onto the lines and put any kind of a wiretap on.
Yeah.
And this is something that originally when we started talking about this concept, years and years ago, it was the thing of the spy trade.
Yep.
And today, not so much.
Nope.
Yeah, I'm sure spies use it. I'm sure that with the vast internet out there, there are going to be plenty of people who are doing various transmissions of information. At the same time, I think a lot of people would be at least doing themselves a favor by looking into a VPN. We don't have any VPN sponsors or anything like that. I'm going to just suggest you type in VPN, you Google it, and it'll give you more information on various
whatever
providers.
You're looking
yeah,
for.
Yeah. Did that kind of fill in a lot of questions
oh,
for you?
Yeah.
Then? Are you looking at a VPN?
No.
You don't do that much traveling off into Berlin no, or Moscow or
no, I don't do
Beijing.
That. Nope. And
no plans to do that?
No, and my computer is very secure.
Let's hope so. There's so much to VPNs. I really enjoy the concept, especially for work. I've been utilizing work VPNs for probably 15 plus years now. No, more than that, 20 plus years. It's been a long time. Anyways, the guy asking the questions, usually he's giving us all kinds of other stuff. That's Steve Geske. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. With the impending doom of Windows 10 right around the corner, Ethan's question is really, really timely. Why do we accept digital decay as normal when we would never tolerate it in the physical world? Ethan reached out to me. You can do it too at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. I will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Again, computertalkradio.com. So, Ethan, why do we accept digital decay as normal when we wouldn't do it in the real world? And I get it. Look, if a book disintegrated after a matter of 5 years, or a chair collapsed just because it was no longer supported, we'd be all upset. You're driving down the road and your car goes, we're no longer working. It's time. You got to replace your car. I've had it for 5 years. That's right. Yes, you have for exactly 5 years. It's time to get a new one. What? You know, across the country, most people keep their car for about 12 years. If you buy a new car, you have it for about 12 years. That is something that we look at this and, okay, our computers should have a better lifetime than just a matter of a few years. And it's right. We have an issue where a lot of things are chasing forward and a lot of different companies are encouraging the usage of new technologies in such a way that, well, it actually boils down to it really feels like, and we can probably say that the entire industry is relying on planned or even programmed obsolescence. We look at Windows 10. I don't know that they planned 10 years ago that it was going to end exactly in October 2025, but I'll tell you, it does kind of feel weird. Okay, yes, they do keep coming out with things like Windows 11, and maybe someday it'll be Windows 12, or maybe it'll be Windows Ocelot, naming it after the cat that's off in the Southwest. You know, I don't know, but But here's the thing. Yes, in the tech world, unlike in the physical goods world, companies can force you to stop using a product by discontinuing the support. And we find this across the entire tech industry in a way that's why a lot of people like to invest in the tech industry. Whatever it is, you start thinking about it. How long is that going to last? Look, I have books that are 100 years old or even older. Do I read them a whole lot? No, but it's kind of nice to have them on hand. But I do have books that are from, I've got a number of books, a large number of books by Robert Anton Heinlein and Michael Crichton. And each of those books I value. And those are all on paperback. Well, not actually hardcover books. They're not going away. I will have those and I'll be able to pass those along at whatever point in time. I love to read them. I do enjoy the feel of the paper. Other books, yeah, they're on Kindle and that's fine. And maybe someday we will find out that Amazon has gone bankrupt. Not likely at this point. But we may find that Amazon says, yeah, you no longer need that book or this book. And before you say, no, that'll never happen, well, we've actually seen exactly that with a couple of different situations where Amazon basically went to users and said, hey, oddly enough, one of them was George Orwell's 1984, if I recall correctly. They basically said, well, this isn't in the public domain. And the person who offered it up said it was, and they were wrong. So you no longer get to read that. You get to buy it instead. The problem is we've been conditioned to accept a lot of this. The idea that old tech stops working has become very normalized. Most of us don't even question it. Yeah, we do look back upon some of these different things. Yes, a system that used to run Windows 95 might have worked through Windows 98. But we already know that some of the hard drives and some of the different pieces and components throughout this computer have a mean time to repair, MTTR, and hard drives, they're only good for so many hours. And the power supply and all of these other components, at a certain point, yes, they will stop working. It's no longer like the old days. You know, they don't make it like they used to. Well, that's because they figure that you're going to at least upgrade on some kind of regular basis to take advantage of the new features, the new speed, the new abilities of computers that we didn't have back in 1995 when Windows 95 came out. And to some extent, that's reasonable for the companies to factor that in, and they do fairly well with that. It's still a problem, though. We have all kinds of different issues that are continuing to come at us. A matter of, yes, tech companies, they control access, not just ownership. You know, I don't own the books that I have on my Kindle. I don't truly own them. Any of these digital books, the music, the software, you and I are just renting access until someone comes along and says, no, you don't. Of course, deeper into this problem is there is a financial incentive by the manufacturers, by the providers of these books and media and all of this to actually allow things to kind of fall apart and to break. If old software kept working forever, companies would sell fewer upgrades. There's this video I saw, and I haven't validated this. I'm not sure I will, but there was this idea, you know, light bulbs used to last a very, very long time. And then all of the light bulb companies got together and said, you can't make a light bulb that lasted more than 1,000 hours. And you would actually get a fine if you were part of this big, huge light bulb consortium if too many of your light bulbs lasted 2,000 hours or 5,000 hours. That's why we have LED light bulbs. LEDs should just last forever, but no, they don't. These light bulbs break down. And is that shoddy workmanship, shoddy manufacturing, or is that something that's planned in? Well, in their case, the whole idea there was suggested that, yes, their financial incentive to have those light bulbs not last so long was so that they could have a continuing building supply of customers. Of course, physical objects do age naturally, but the digital ones do age artificially. A well-built chair should last decades, but a well-built app can be bricked overnight by a company decision or a company indecision as they fail to stay in business. And this is a concern. This is something that we have a future ahead of us where we are seeing the end of our property. We're seeing the end of our ownership, and things are not lasting like they should. I think, yes, it would be good that we should have some level of ability to treat digital goods like real possessions, things that we should have the right to keep, to fix, to use indefinitely. And I really think that we are going in a direction where more and more of us are going to wind up paying more and more of our paycheck into things that really aren't as great as what we would have hoped and don't last as long as what we would have hoped. This is something that this is digital decay, and we're just little small pieces in this puzzle, and we're not going to be able to fix this anytime soon because this is a big, huge puzzle, and it saddens me that we can't fix it. Who knows? Somebody may come up with a good idea sooner or later. As for now, my name is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
August reached out to me. Why does my computer slow down after I open several programs? August reached out to me, of course, at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. And we went through a number of different things in regards to his computer. And this is something initially we're going to talk about memory, because this is probably the key area here for most people when we're talking about several programs. I want you to think about your computer's memory, your RAM, as a workbench. Each open program will occupy space on this workbench. And the more programs you have open, the less space that remains for new tasks, leading to slower performance. Now, obviously, the first issue here is close down anything that's not in use. You've got to really go through. You have to shut down any applications that you're not actively using so that you can free up memory. I have to do that on a regular basis. and I've got 32 gigs of RAM. That is no longer a big number, but it was when I bought my computer. My next computer is going to have even more RAM just because, well, I have this tendency to open up a lot of applications, and some of them are very memory intensive. Now, the neat thing about your computer is, yes, it has something called virtual RAM. And what that is it's a section of your hard drive that they've taken over so that if something is not actively in use, it can swap it down to the hard drive. And it can make usage of your hard drive space to really free up your RAM. But that gets into a situation where it's also going to be slow with your computer. Why? Because think of this as within your computer, the highway, if you will, between your processor, your CPU, and memory is lightning fast. It is like the Autobahn. The information goes straight on through to the memory and back, and it's all great. It's all fine and dandy. If it has to go down to your hard drive, even if you've got a state-of-the-art solid-state drive, the time involved is not the Autobahn. We're talking about it's going to be that little exit off to the side that immediately leads to a dirt road off in the middle of nowhere. And it's got to go 5 miles down and then 5 miles back. And again, it's a dirt road. You're not going to be doing, like the Autobahn, a matter of 120, 130, 140 miles an hour. You're going to be doing 20 miles an hour. So yes, it kind of works. It helps keep things running, but it's not going to be ideal. It is going to bog your system down. Now, we can go through a few other things. We can limit the amount of startup programs that happen. You can go through, and any of these different programs that launch at startup are going to actually slow down your startup time, but also the ability for a lot of things to go on. Each of these little things that's down in your system tray, I'll pop open mine here just to kind of glance at it. And I have, what is that? 40 of them? Yeah. Well, maybe it's 35, 36. Look, that is going to seriously impact things. Now, I've got 32 gigs of RAM. I can afford to let a lot of those things stay open and so forth. Every once in a while, whenever I do my quote-unquote spring cleaning, yes, I'm going through and I'm making sure that all of those different items are truly applicable to me at the current time. And why do I say that at the current time? Because over the course of 2 or 3 years, you install programs and then you go through, you uninstall some of those programs and you go, well, or you need to uninstall programs. You go, you know what? That's still sitting there and I don't use that anymore. I used to use that a lot, but I don't. So this is just another direction to go in. One of the things that I talked about with August was the idea of increasing RAM. Now, in August's case, his computer was 7 years old. Now, I suggested to him, it's time to start thinking about a new computer. He's got a number of other issues. The slowing down after opening several programs was just one of a few other issues, and it lent to the idea of going in that new direction. And let's take a side trip here for a moment. At 3 years old, upgrading the RAM on a computer is going to be very cost effective. It will give you some speed bump in this particular situation. At 5 years, we start having to think this over because just like with cars, okay, you've got a car that is 10 years old. Do you really want to do heavy upgrades into a 10-year-old car? It's the same thing with a 5-year-old computer and a 7-year-old computer. That's closer to like a 14-year-old car. You really don't want to be putting brand new wheels, not tires, but brand new wheels on the car. You don't want to replace the engine or the transmission. Maybe you do if it's kind of a special car, but computers aren't necessarily all that special. They're kind of run-of-the-mill. There's tons of them, and they're not high-ticket items. But the RAM, that is one of the big key portions here. Like I said, I'm going to be upgrading to 64 gigs of RAM with my next system. That's because, yes, I am somewhat of a power user. I have a lot of different things going and running at any given point in time. Of course, you can look for software that requires less memory. Things like upgrading your browser, switching away from Chrome, switching away from Edge. Some of the browsers out there are very lightweight. You can think about using LibreOffice, which is an alternative to Microsoft Office. You can start looking at some of these different things. It doesn't mean you should or need to, but it's an option that's available to you. Of course, running regular checks on the rest of your computer, clearing it up, cleaning it, is just like cleaning off your workbench. By doing this, your computer can run more efficiently. It can handle tasks without all of these unnecessary slowdowns. But at a 7-year-old computer, yeah, it's probably time to upgrade. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and how that all intertwines. I want to talk about security, and really, we need to just get right down to the bottom line on this. Even with the high-tech tools that are out there, even if they are AI-driven, cyber criminals know the easiest way in is through you, not the machine, and not through your computer, not through your through anything that's there. The latest here is that attackers are targeting humans because systems alone can't catch everything. Let's go into some of the stats that are out there. Stanford did a recent bit of research. 88% of data breaches come from employee mistakes. IBM had another finding. 95% of breaches involve some level of human error. The firewall that we have is code, but the final barrier is actually you. We need to be readdressing security across the industry. We need to be starting off with everyone in the company. This isn't IT's job. This is a company-wide mindset shift that turns everyone from the ground up, from the receptionist all the way on up to the CEO, into a proactive defender, turning everybody. Everybody needs to turn from being a liability into an ally against the bad guys. Now, first up, We need to throw out all of the dusty manuals, all of the annual training modules. We need to start really diving deeper into things like micro-learning, gamification, real-world simulations, and cultural context, because generic cybersecurity 101 isn't working for us. So what do we need to do? Well, first up, we need to start off with a zero trust posture. This is a matter of we need to teach everybody not to trust anything that is coming along via email, via website, via voicemail, via phone calls, all of this. We need to throw that out. You cannot trust anybody that's approaching you. This kind of ongoing approach and awareness, it really needs to be keeping all of us sharp in order to reduce risk. Now, we need to be tracking behaviors, not just knowledge. We need to be going through all of these different simulations and tests and all kinds of different levels of incident reporting to start pinpointing what the gaps are and guiding improvements. Now, I am not saying in any of this that we should be punishing people. Hey, this person flunked this security exam, so we're going to get rid of them. No. I'm saying we need to retrain that person again and again and again. The savviest out there still need to go through the training, but if they are really savvy, maybe we reduce the training. If they're not savvy, we bump the training up more frequently. Now, AI is going to automate a lot of the routine defenses, but it is nowhere near time for us to consider the whole idea of artificial intelligence as a replacement for your insight, my insight, the human brain, because they can deal with a lot of different automation, but human judgment is vital for handling what turns out to be very complex threats. There's this idea of think first, verify always. And this is a framework that has been starting to catch some steam here. It embeds human reasoning into cybersecurity. And they've found that this actually provides measurable improvements in detecting all kinds of deception just with a little bit of training, just with a little bit of learning. And we're talking all of the different types of deception, whether we're talking real people, people who are using scripts, the bad guys, and even AI items that are out there. No matter how advanced your tools are, humans still are the most targeted and error-prone in cybersecurity. Our missteps account for the vast majority of all of these different breaches. And the threats are climbing, the stakes are getting higher, and we need to be together, a living, breathing human firewall. We need to make cybersecurity everyone's job. And again, that hyper-relevant continuous training, behavior tracking, and iteration of all of that. We need to get that culture of zero trust ingrained within our brains, our minds, and we need to be approaching this from that human perspective. Yes, the machines should be involved, and even the humans feeding information into the machines. Hey, I think this is a scam. And the machine starts learning from that. But we need to be prioritizing the whole idea of skepticism and verification all the way along. Yes, technology can provide instruments, but without the conductor, the human-centered, vigilant, adaptable workforce, it's going to all fall apart. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Maya's question, why do I keep getting pop-ups even though I have a blocker? And this is something that plagues all of us. This is something that we may have blockers. Is your blocker properly installed? Is it enabled on that website? There's all kinds of different things that are going to be of concern here. And pop-up blockers, ad blockers, don't always work as well as we would like. And everybody out there who is putting up ads, everybody from YouTube to the New York Times to wherever else, whatever website you might be going to, is saying, hey, we don't want you using an ad blocker, a pop-up blocker, please, so you can access our information, please enable it for our website, or disable it, rather. So some of the different pop-ups out there, some of the different ads are triggered by various scripts that are embedded in these ads and into all of this. So they may not be blocked when we expect them to be. We also have issues like ad blockers can become outdated, or they may be disabled by browser updates. I went through that probably 6 months to a year ago with my ad blocker of choice. And you're going to have to perhaps research another ad blocker that's out there. There's other things that go along with this. I mean, you might look at all of your different extensions. You may have too many extensions and they're all in conflict. They're leaking data, or somehow they're just having some kind of an issue. So think about it. There's, again, plenty of ad blockers and pop-up blockers out there. One of the other things that I do want to really highlight, and that is that if you're getting pop-ups without a browser open, or you're getting weird pop-ups that seem particularly nasty, they're threatening malware and stuff like that, these actually could be from installed adware. These could be something that are where you've got a situation where something is coming up that is outside of your browser. It looks like, for all intents and purposes, it looks like you're using your browser and it's coming up from that. But no, instead, there is adware that's out there that all it does is it sits in your system tray. And that's a tricky one to get rid of. You've got to look through, you've got to run a scan on your system, and you've got to be very aware of everything that sits down in your system tray. Your system tray really is home to a lot of things that don't need to be there. So look into removing any different applications that you've got down there that you definitely know you don't need. Yes, there's a number of them. Oh, hey, we're a coupon watcher. And when you go, you know, looking for better prices on Amazon or whatever, we're going to give you a better price. No, make sure you get rid of any of those different little items. This is a situation where we're going to be presented with ads for a very long time. The industry has changed, and they found that, yes, it's easy to bombard us with ads wherever we go. And that's how they make money, of course. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, The Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.